My name is Eddie Lindenstein. It is Wednesday, June the 26th. Thank you so much for tuning in today. As always, we're going to kick off the podcast by saying thank you so much to the patrons of the show. Patreon.com/The Mind and Fitness Podcast. So patrons of the show are people that are making some kind of a monetary donation, in most cases monthly, towards the show. So these are people that support the show, help to keep the lights on, pay for equipment, pay for publishing, pay for the time that is spent on it. There's over a dozen now, which is pretty awesome. So every episode, I always start by giving a shout out to the people that make that contribution. And so I will start from the most recent. There was three new patrons since the last show aired, which is pretty awesome. So shout out to Holly, shout out to Ross, shout out to Caroline. Let's give a big shout out to Julie. Shout out to Casey. You have to excuse me. I'm reading this on a computer. Usually it's on my cell phone where I have it all sorted by unread, but on my computer it doesn't look like that. So shout out to Alyssa, Brian, Sarah, Adrian. Shout out to Stan. Thank you, Stan. I appreciate that. Shout out to Kristen, Sarah, Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. So thank you so much for making a contribution to the show. Again, Patreon is a place for creators. So if you've got a favorite YouTube channel, a favorite podcast that's out there, a favorite musician, maybe that's just doing online at the moment, maybe this is the opportunity to support them, help them out a little bit on their journey. So this is episode number 76-ish, 77, something like that. And it's an interview today. So the open is going to be shorter than usual. It's going to be with somebody that if you're on any of these Facebook TMS forums, you're going to be very familiar with her, Kim Guillory, but she does some coaching in the mind-body space, and so we're going to get into that, but it's a really fascinating journey of how she went from debilitating pain, lots of surgeries, even the removal of certain organs, which is pretty wild as we're going to go through a lot of that stuff. Her story is truly transformational, and it's about an hour long, so I'm going to get out of here and skedaddle. There's a lot of interviews coming up in the next couple of months. I think it's booked 2 months out now as far as show guests for interviews. But again, as I always say, if you have an interesting story to tell, if you've got something that you feel like people will have value of, whether you're a practitioner, a coach, somebody that has an amazing recovery story, email me, Eddie@themindandfitnesspodcast.com. You can also reach me on Facebook, Instagram, really wherever it is that you want to reach me, because I'd love to hear your story. I'd love to talk to you. It would be 45 minutes to an hour out of your day. And thank you so much. Here is Kim. 1 year ago, I was belly down, trapped in pain by my own body. I had the MRI report and surgeon appointment set. Bulging discs, posterior impinging root nerve, and inability to sit for 16 straight weeks. I wondered if I wanted to continue living, if pain was always going to be my teacher. I was ready to check out. Over 20 years of diagnoses, chronic pain, major depression, anxiety, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, adrenal fatigue, thyroid imbalance, plantar fasciitis, insomnia, restless leg syndrome, you get the point. Diagnosis after diagnosis, multiple prescriptions, multiple surgeries, removing multiple body parts that were considered unnecessary, such as my appendix, tonsils, gallbladder, uterus, ovaries, a total of 14 surgeries starting as a preteen. I was tired, as many of you are. Some of you listening may have already read this post, but it was posted the day before I record this. And so I've got Kim Guillory on the line, and we're going to talk all about her story today on the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Kim, are you there?
I am here. Hi, Eddie.
Hello. Thank you so much for getting this set up. Now, we were going to have this about a month ago, and then I needed to reschedule, shame on me, but I was feeling real overwhelmed right around that time with work and life and stuff like that. And you were about to take off for what looked like the journey of a lifetime. Maybe we start there. Where did you go? You're in Central Louisiana. You're back at home now. But where did you go? What did you do? And why did you do it?
Okay, I am back at home. Pretty interesting story. So when you and I were originally supposed to have this conversation, I think it was that week, right? Like the week before I was going to leave.
Yep.
And so the journey, I have been on this self-exploration, kind of just trying to figure things out for years, and hired coaches and was like looking to see who was going to be the next coach. What was the next thing I was going to learn? And one of my coaches said, Kim, I want to like pose a challenge to you. She said, take your money, get in your car and go on an experience. Figure it out for yourself. And I was like, done. I go, like, where does this start, right? And who are the masters? Like, who are the teachers that I want to be at, or where's the essence or the environment that I want to be in, and what do I want to see? And it kind of started with that. I already had a trip to Lake Tahoe planned for a coaching retreat that I was going to, and the rest just fell into place. I found Joe Dispenza, Greg Braden, Bruce Lipton, like, all along the path, same exact dates and times. And, you know, they're all about, we create our lives. You know, and they have the scientific proof behind it. And I wanted to go sit in the essence of that. And so that kind of guided the trip. And then someone mentioned, you know, you're all about grounding and being here and presence. And have you ever heard of Mount Shasta? Like, that's like the root chakra of the world. And I was like, well, let me look. You know, I'm not geographically wise. So I pulled up like MapQuest and I was like, oh, it's 4 hours away. Right. Done. And so that ended up being the final destination. And the rest, I truly got in my car. Eddie, this is the craziest thing. So a year ago, I was like, kind of, is where I first got involved with your group. I was in intense sciatica pain. This trip, like, knowing that I drove 5,500 miles by myself is like, that would have been near impossible a year ago.
Yep.
I couldn't drive. I couldn't sit. As a matter of fact, I was sitting in this same exact place that I'm sitting right now talking to you when it started. I had just paid someone $2,000 to take my business global and put my message out there. And I paid him, and within hours, I locked up and got stuck. And so the stories kind of match, right? It's kind of like the sequence of, and so I'm leaving to go on this trip. I'm sitting at the end of the driveway where I have envisioned myself a million times trying to get out of whatever it is I was in, which is this same old story.
Yeah.
And so all I knew is I was going left, and I followed that inner guidance. What do I need to see? What do I need to learn? Where do I need to go? And that's what that trip was. I went across Texas, which everyone knows that takes like forever, and into New Mexico, spent some time in Santa Fe, went up to Sedona. That's where I spent the time with Bruce Lipton and Greg Braden and the Heart Math Institute. It's all about this work. And then I headed up from there, went to Mount Shasta, spent some time, went up into Oregon, came down through the Redwoods and all the way down through the coast and back.
And you did this solo?
I did this solo.
What kind of car were you driving for it?
A Yukon.
Oh, a Nissan?
A Yukon.
Oh, a Yukon. Wow, nice big car too.
This is so funny. We're talking, having this conversation. It's all part of the story. I was in a Nissan Murano, thought that was the reason for sciatica.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't fit. I think I even posted that in the group. Like, it was like, I was like compacted in this like knee up. Like, the car's too small. That's the problem. I drive a lot. My car's too small. When we were looking into a new car, I couldn't drive. I was laying in the back seat on my stomach. My husband drove to the dealership. He drove the new car. And I didn't even get to drive it home. That was all at the time. Because I was looking for anything to get me out of this pain.
Yep.
And so this is the, and so when I'm in and I'm like, you know what, if I have to sleep in my car, I have plenty of room.
Right. Well, and so what are you doing now? Like, what do you do for, your profession? And then I want to go back a little bit, and, you know, learn about really like your story of, I just read a post that you made last October. So let's just call it 9 months ago, basically. It sounded like you were in the pit. I think you had just had an MRI done or something, and it was all these different things going on with your spine. And I can imagine how you felt at that moment, because I've been there. But what do you do now at the present time?
So I was in the pit, by the way. We will come back to that.
Yeah.
It was about as low as it. That was, y'all were my last straw. That post changed everything. So I'm an integrative life coach trainer. So what I do is mind, body, wellness integration, which is processing emotional trauma, emotional release, emotional integration, which it's all about mind, body, wellness, and how the physical conditions in our body, in our life, or physical manifestations of our mental and emotional self. And what I do is train health professionals, medical practitioners, as well as yoga teachers and life coaches, health coaches, who have this missing piece, which is the integration and the embodiment of bringing back those old, like getting those parts of our self that were left in the traumatic incidences back on board.
What's been the reception for for you, especially when you go to a medical specialist, somebody that's been trained on to essentially treat the body as a car or a motorcycle, this piece of machinery that, you have a spark plug that goes bad, you change the spark plug, the machine runs again. And in a lot of ways, like, that's how medicine is operated. Right. So what's the reception when you walk into medical specialist office and explain this stuff to them? Is the reception seem to be good or not so good?
Yeah, well, that was probably the reason that the whole repressed sciatica condition showed up, because it has not been good. I'm in a very rural area. I teach yoga here. I am a meditation teacher. Matter of fact, my whole journey has led me to become the person that I am. I was in this, it was kind of just this constant turmoil of unhealthy when I was living a healthy lifestyle. Like, I was very aware, I was like eating right. I was exercising. I own a ladies' fitness place. And, and yet I'm like, I couldn't walk for, I was taken off of all weight bearing activity with plantar fasciitis. And, I had these issues with my feet. I had these organs removed, as you just read. And it was always like, I thought everyone else knew the answers, and I listened to everything I was told. If they said surgery was the right thing, then I did the surgery. Before I knew it, I was on 7 medications. I spent 20 something years super depressed because I'm a feeler. And I could not feel my own emotions because the medication had created this block between myself and my feelings. And the more I would go and cry and complain, it's like before I knew it, we were up to 350 milligrams of Wellbutrin. I was taking Xanax. I was taking Klonopin. I was like, I couldn't even think straight anymore. I remember stopping on the side of the road, calling my husband, and I was like, I cannot go home. And he's like, what do you mean you can't go home? I was like, I cannot go home. Like, I'm going crazy. There's something wrong with me. I don't know what to do. I was 29 years old. I had just had a full hysterectomy. My head was not connected to my body. Everything was broken and wrong. I thought I was like, I just thought I was going crazy. I left the doctor's office through the back door. Could not go in the reception. I'd been crying so much. And I said, can you send me somewhere? Can you do something? What can you do? It's not like I wasn't aware that something was wrong. I just couldn't find the help and the resource, right? And he was like, his wife was going through her own stuff, right? Matter of fact, after with years following, she ended up like committing suicide. Like this, it's like, this was like, I was in the mix of this, like, so alive and so real, and seeking the professionals. I went to like dozens of doctors and surgeries and trying to figure out all of this stuff. And so there was not a reception as in, yeah, we get you, we hear you, there's something. It was more like, I don't know what to do with you. I want to help you. I wish I could. I wish I could help my own wife. Like, I, right. And so in that particular incident, like, I went to a mental health place and did an assessment. Like, can y'all keep me? What can you do with me? And he's like, what do you mean you can't go home? I was like, I just closed the business. I just locked the doors. Like, I just walked out. I was doing hair and nails, and I had this, like, I had a business. And he was like, what am I supposed to do with you? We have 5 kids at home. I remember my daughter wrote on her calendar, Mom went nuts. Like, that's pretty much the perception of what it looked like. But I'm telling you, I was there the whole entire time. I was watch myself not be able to figure this out.
What were some of the initial diagnoses or, reasons for your pain that were explained? Because I know, just probably like me, is that if you met with a new doctor, a new specialist, and they said, oh, it's this thing, this is the reason. So if we do this thing to this thing, then you'll be out of pain. Like, what were some of the more, because I had a couple of diagnoses that I was told by multiple doctors were the thing. So yeah. What were maybe a couple of things that you were told were the thing?
So I remember in the biggest bulk of the search and the journey, because mine, I dealt with a lot of depression, but the depression was coming from the not being connected, right? And having this pain and not being able to figure it out. And then it would move around. That was the thing. So like, even when I had my appendix out, like in the 7th grade, I remember like crying all night long, and like my dad taking me to the hospital, and they said it was a virus, and I get home and I couldn't, it was just so intense. And so he took me to a different hospital, and they ended up doing emergency surgery. They were like, the appendix were about to burst. And so it's like, we did it, got it out right then and there. And so when I take myself back to all of those situations and the diagnosis of like, I was like extremely tired. I was so tired. I was so, exhausted. And it was just like, well, because my mom left like when I was a kid, an infant, and so I never knew my mom. And so it was like, oh, well, she must have been depressed. You probably got it from her. Sure, it's, it's hereditary. This is all genetics. Everything kind of kept going to that. It's just bad luck. It's just the way your body is. It's no big deal. We can take those parts out. They're not necessary, like the gallbladder, the tonsils, the, as this, and even the female parts. Like I want my uterus back. Like I want my hormonal system back intact. Right. You know, there's so many things that I wanted to speak about once it was all said and done, but I truly think I had to go through the experience in order to come to the experience. Like, I remember the day I put it all together. I was reading Louise Hay's work, You Can Heal Your Life. And when I started connecting the body parts to the ages and times and years. And like I'm saying, I've been journaling since I am a teenager. So it's like, I remembered very specifically when I was dealing with the stuff I was dealing with. And when I connected what was happening when it was the appendix, when it was happening, when it was the tonsils, when it was the, you know, the, all of that stuff, I just like dropped, my mouth dropped. And I was like, this is it. This makes sense. This is it. That's what I'm saying. By the time I came across TMS, I already had a realization of the physical manifestation and the mental and emotional, you know, aspects of that. But it, something with the TMS group, the books, the way Dr. Sarnos puts it, it just brought it home. Like, it was, I'm sure without a shadow of a doubt, and I never have to think anything else again. Like, I was that sure kind of thing. Whereas when the sciatica incident came up, I was suddenly like, oh my God, is my whole entire life and career built on a lie?
How long ago were you, that moment when you're reading Louise Hay's work, how long ago was that roughly?
At least 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Like matter of fact, I stepped into the business. I'm kind of going all over the place. I'm sorry. I'm not following your questions.
Oh, it's okay.
So when you asked originally about that process, so it led into what I am now. So it started as, so I was a cosmetologist, but I was doing like a lot of connection with people through cosmetology, right behind the chair and the pedicure stage. That's where I started kind of learning about human nature and personality, and I started seeing things about relationship. And I have 5 kids, you know, I've been in this marriage for 30 years. It's like there was so much I was trying to figure out, and I didn't have a parental upbringing. Like, I didn't really belong anywhere. So I was trying to figure out life on my own. And so I was like listening to my clients, and like I was trying to figure out, like, how do you stay married? How do you raise kids? How do you have a spiritual life? You know, and so it's like all that along. And then whenever I couldn't help myself, I signed up at IIN and became a health coach, became a yoga teacher because I couldn't do the fitness anymore. I couldn't do exercise. And I was like, I have to do something. I'm going to die. Like, I'm so I'm depressed if I don't move my body. So at least I can do yoga. So I couldn't find a yoga teacher because I'm in a very rural area. So I went to yoga teacher training. Kind of like, I couldn't find a health coach. So I just became the health coach. And then from there, I became the meditation teacher. I became the life coach. I became the hypnotherapist. Like, I started to try to figure this out for myself. I was like, well, I'm just going to hypnotize myself. Like, I'm going to go in there and find out what's happening with me that's not right. And why can't I figure this out? And so from that hypnotherapy, and then when everything finally came together, I was like, holy smoke. It's not information.
Right.
It's not the medicine. It's the integration and embodiment of the information and the processing of the emotion to be able to come to that place of wholeness and connection. Boof.
How did you stumble across Sarnos' books, work?
Good question. I don't know if I was researching sciatica. I don't know if it was through the hypnotherapy world, if it was like, how did I even get into the TMS group, or how did, let me see. I have dozens of books. I have them right here in front of me. Like, I already had Feelings Buried Alive, Dare Never Die, Your Body Keeps the Score. You know, like those books. I already had at least a dozen. I did not have Dr. Sarnos. I don't know why. It had never come across. It wasn't time. Yep. You know, that's all I can say is it's the way things just process and work out, right? Life is always happening for us. I would say it was somewhere in the mind-body community. Have you read this work or whatever? I found his, the 2.5-hour YouTube.
Yep. When it was there, but yeah, the lecture one, right?
It's not there anymore?
No, I saw it brought up not long ago that people were wondering where it was, and I think it was taken down due to copyright, which I get. If you were somebody that was lucky enough to see it while it was there, you can still buy it. I can't remember the name of the actual website, but you can go and buy a DVD or VHS or whatever of his actual lecture. There's nothing in there that isn't in the books, but some people like the reassurance of hearing the voice and seeing the visual of him doing it. So, you know, maybe that makes a difference.
And you know, it's such a, like, it's an amazing, beautiful concept, but it is something that the mind has to hear 1,000 times to truly accept. We know that because we try to tell everyone, right? Because it's like, once you catch onto this stuff, like, you want the world to know. And I know for myself personally, when you asked, you know, how receptive has it been? Like, I still, you know, just a few weeks ago, I was told, you know, by a local here that, about coming to yoga, like she went to the priest, like about coming, and she knows it's wrong in the church, and she feels like it's the thing for her to do, and like she's recognizing that it's a sin. And I'm like, this is 2019, and this is really still not received,
yeah.
You know. And so TMS is kind of right there with that. It's like, it's really not mainstream yet.
Well, I mean, I know when I bring it up to, and it's almost like the closer to me that the people are, meaning like relationship proximity, the more met it is with vitriol and terrible response, whether it's my brother or my friends or my mom or, you know, whatever it is, it's just like totally disregarded. I mean, regardless of the fact that I was just laid up, not doing anything, not lifting weights, not working out, being really like a shell of myself. And then suddenly it was like, you know, snap your fingers and poof, and the person's back doing what they were doing before. Granted, I wasn't pain-free immediately. It took a long time for that. But just to be back to the activity, I feel like curiosity in itself would feed somebody asking questions about that, but it did not. In fact, the opposite. It's almost like don't want to, you know, the visual of the three guys that are like, one puts his hands over his eyes, the other one over his mouth, the other one over his ears. That's always what I imagine.
You know, that's, you know, even with this situation, and whenever I was, when it was happening and I was down and my kids would come in. So I have 5 grown kids and my husband, and they were, you know, they were kind of mad at me. Like, my husband was definitely giving me a hard time.
Yep.
Because he's like, I'm being so stubborn. Why don't you just go to the doctor? Like, why don't you just go to the doctor? I don't like, and they were mad and he wouldn't talk to me. I was basically like stuck in this room by myself, belly down on my elbows. Like, I remember, like, my daughter-in-law came in to see how I was doing. I hadn't been up for 3 days. Like, I was like, I can't drink or eat because I can't go to the bathroom. Like, yep. And she was like, this is ridiculous. I cannot believe you're not going to go to the doctor. And I was like, I have been. I don't know what y'all are talking about. They kept saying that. But I was like, I had the injection. I had the steroids. They even put me on antibiotics. Like, what are you talking about? I haven't been to, I went. I can't even drive myself there anymore. Like, right. I'm so done with that part. And I was like, and at the same time, I knew, right? And it's like, I was trying to figure it out with my head, though, like we see so many in the group do. And it's like I was caught in this hell cycle, you know? And I truly thought, okay, this is it. Like, if I have to experience this sort of pain the rest of my life, because understand, mine's been coming since I was in 7th grade. Yeah. Like, this is on and off, traveling throughout my entire body, through my organs, through everything. I was like, I'm out. I'm just freaking out. Like, that, I don't know how, you know, without it sounding ridiculous, you know, it's like, I was livid. There was no support anywhere. I couldn't get relief. I had people, like even friends, giving me pain reliever, pain medicine that wasn't, it was doing nothing. I was on muscle relaxers. I you hear me stutter? Like, I've never felt anything like this.
Yeah.
Basically felt like I was being pinned down by the universe, by this force beyond me. And there was just like, I was so in it. And when I finally just allowed myself to go in it and to completely break and fall apart and feel all the abandonment, all the lack of support, all that, like, that I was feeling from them not listening, you know, like that kind of arguing with me about, I was like, I don't know what y'all are not seeing. I'm doing everything I can possibly do. Like, I was doing massage therapy, physical therapy. Matter of fact, I had a chiropractor, massage therapist, like, all on staff. Like, here in my, they were, my physical therapist was coming to my home. Like, I don't know what y'all mean by I'm not doing anything, you right. know? And so when I really surrendered and I cried and I broke and I snotted and I, like, just let it all fall apart and finally became vulnerable and soft and let these emotions just rip through, all this protection, all this badassery, all this, like, I've, you know, done it the hard way, everything just resolved. And I put one more time in that post, that's the one you read from October. like I was like, it was like this last reach, and I got exactly what I needed. And it was just a hang in there, because by this time I had, they had actually convinced me to go to do the MRI, and I was in between this, do I want to know, will I do anything about it if I do, is it true, right? I was like really playing the edge of that, because what would you do today once you knew? That's the position I was in.
Yeah.
And I remember I got in my car and I was listening to Pink full blast on repeat, and I screamed at the top of my lungs and cried all the way there because I was in so much pain. And I drove 45 minutes. I got to the MRI place. I could not sit. I remember walking, walking, walking. This guy takes me back to do my MRI. Something in this moment is really when things switched. I knew him from the past. Like I knew who he was, but he was so kind and gentle. And I said, I can't lay on there. I don't know how you're going to do this. And he said, we're going to get you comfortable. And he patted it very, like he just was so compassionate. I was so broken. Like, and I laid on my back on that table and nothing hurt. I couldn't believe it. Like, I was like, how did you do that? I swear to you, it was something about the support and the gentleness and the non-judgment and the just let me help you.
Right.
And in that moment, I knew, I was like, how did that just happen? I've not had a moment of relief. And how did this just happen? And I didn't think I could do the MRI. I stayed like that. I didn't want to get out.
What were you in there? Like, what was the MRI for at that time?
That was for the sciatica.
For the sciatica. Okay. And did you end up going in and actually having the imaging done? And then if so, like, what did it reveal?
That's what I posted in the group. That's what I was saying. It revealed the impinged root nerve, yep. The bulging disc, I had the appointment with the surgeon, and I was going to the surgeon when I put the post. I don't even know where the MRI sheet is at anymore, and I canceled the appointment, and that was it.
That is, yeah, no, it's wild. So what was the, I guess like you're in that moment of despair and you have all these diagnoses and you're talking to the surgeon and you ended up canceling the surgery. What was the moment where the tides, cause it sounds like the tide, like suddenly, swiftly, drastically, whatever word you want to use, changed, like something almost like 180'd.
It did. I realized in the moment of safety that the pain left momentarily. And there was no explanation for it.
On the MRI table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like that gave me, it was just so intense for so long. So I couldn't do, like, you'd have to have known that, like, this was like so intense. Like if I picked up my head, like I screamed, like,
yeah.
I was like locked down with this spasm from my buttock down my leg all the way down to my head. Like it was just like the visual I had was like a, I don't know what you would call it, like a piece of equipment that digs dirt. What do you call those?
There's a few things, but a shovel, I mean, we can just start there.
I'm talking like a equipment and it locks down and it pulls the dirt up. Like it felt like something was locking down on me and it felt like metal. Like it was so intense. I couldn't breathe. Like if I took too deep of a breath, it would pull. And so it was so intense. And the fact that like all the way there was that. And yet when he, like then in that moment of, it was not there. Like I could understand, my brain could not understand. How did this just happen? How am I laying on my back? Number one,
yeah.
I haven't been on my back all this time. I could not lay on my back. I couldn't sit. I had to sleep on my stomach. I had to sleep on pillows. Like I had, there was, you know, I did calls. Like my coaches that are in my pack, my business can tell you, they watched me through all of this. I was at retreat. It took me 3 days to get 6 hours away to host a retreat. I refused to cancel it. And they watched me. They held me. They came in the jacuzzi while I was screaming and crying in this pain. And they held the space for this to release through me.
When you talk about like being able to feel and process the emotions, can you describe that? I spent the last I don't know, 3 of the last 4 episodes that I've done, I've talked in depth about my interpretation and how I do it. But talk about, I mean, let's say that in 2 months you start having a lot of pain somewhere. Like, you know what to do. And so what do you do?
Okay. So my entire process first is to get present. and just notice and recognize. And I kind of just kind of feel into it, analyze it. Like, what is this, right? Where is it happening in my body? Where does it start? Where is it ending? Can I describe it? Can I use a color? Can I use a number? Can I? And then I just stay present. And my motto is I'm willing to feel anything. I'm willing to feel anything. I'm willing to experience anything. And I just begin to relax into it. And I'm very aware of the exhale. So almost like a person who smokes, like they think they smoke to relieve stress, right? But you were really, they're going in for the exhale. If they could throw the cigarette away and still do the inhale and exhale, they would get the release.
Right.
And so we dip down and we pull it up. And every exhale, I imagine, has an emotion, has a thought, has a story, has a experience. And so it's really getting to that space of awareness and unveiling what is not so. Because is it true? Is there like machinery gripping my body and holding me down? Just because that's what it feels like. That's my perception. That's my interpretation of how intense it is, right?
Right.
Is it true? Is it true? What is true right now in this moment, right? And I get really grounded and release. And I stay in it and I keep inhaling, exhaling, releasing, inhale, exhale, release. And I go into the stories. And this is where I like the hypnotherapy and the regression work. And sometimes it's necessary. I don't think it's always. I truly don't think you have to go into that and that you need to know what that particular symptom is to that particular sign, to that particular, right? I used to think that. And that's what PMS has taught me. Is my 10 years of experience was people were coming to me because I could tell them why their right shoulder was hurting and tell them why their left knee was hurting and tell them why it was their foot, why it was their upper back, why it was their lower back, why it was their gallbladder, why it was the spleen. Why, like I knew all that. That's embedded in me. I just know the body that on that level.
Right.
And I was able to say it. And as soon as I would say it, and I've talked to Steve O about this, you know, and he says, you don't have to do it. And maybe, you know, it focuses too much attention on it. And I said, I don't agree. Because number one, when I can tell them, this is your right ear, have you thought about this? And the story comes up in an instant and they're able to release it. It's just the awareness. Not that we're performing magic, right? It's just I'm in tune and aware. This is just my gift. It just naturally comes. I just feel it, know it. And then they experience. And when they can experience it, now they're aware of it. What happens once you're aware? You can't unsee.
Yeah, it's interesting. I go back and forth on I've interviewed Steve on this podcast before. I know he's a big fan of Louise Hay's work, and her work is very much driven in here's the physical spot and how it corresponds to, you know, whatever the emotion of the story or the affirmation or whatever it is that you need to do. And he's also a big proponent of not giving it any attention.
Yeah.
Which I can understand. The way that I interpret that, though, and everything literally that's said or written anywhere is open for everybody's interpretation. But I think of when I think of not paying it too much attention, I think of it as like I'm going to go out today to go ride my motorcycle, as an example, and my mid back hurts. Thus, I'm canceling my trip because I'm giving it that attention. I think that's giving it attention in one way, but the other way would be. Understanding and recognizing, okay, I want to go out on my motorcycle. My back hurts. Yes, it does hurt, but I'm still going to go ride my motorcycle. I'm still giving it, attention, but I'm not necessarily giving it.
You're giving it permission and allowance, right? You're allowing it to say what it needs to say, and you're doing it anyway.
Right. And to me, those are their differences, and maybe that's more what it is that he means. And when I talk to people, really, and I always preface this with kind of whatever the problem, regardless of really what the problem is, whether it's a stomach or an ankle or a foot or a back or a neck or whatever, the anecdote to me is exactly the same. And I keep explaining it as, and it was even the title of the most recent episode that dropped. I called it the Stark Reactor. But basically, Tony Stark in Iron Man has this arc plate that's in his chest. It's in the movie, it's keeping shrapnel out of his heart to save his life, but it's like firmly embedded right into the sternum. And for me, when I need to do feeling of it, like yesterday, good example, like I've been slacking off on this kind of stuff recently. I'd been a long time without even a hint of pain or tightness or tension or whatever. And then in the last like 4 or 5 days, I'm just kind of like, oh, I just feel run down. I'm not recovering from workouts that well. And then finally I sat down yesterday for 10 minutes and I just said, okay, I'm going to focus on this part of my body right here in the sternum, and whatever happens, happens. And Because I feel like as long as I can sit there and stare at it, it's like if you were to go, if you were to go into the woods and you saw a grizzly bear and you go running as soon as you see it, that tells the grizzly bear there's a problem and it's going to chase, and that's the way it is. If you stare right at it and you do not move, you don't hesitate, you don't flinch, you don't anything, it may just walk away and leave, right? That's the playing dead concept and things like that too, versus if you fight it, then it will continue going after you. So I sat there for 10 minutes and I stared at this, closed my eyes, but I'm imagining myself staring at this part, and suddenly like it starts like gripping like a vice, and then it moves into this feeling in my neck and my throat, that feeling right before you start crying. Almost like that kind of quivering. And then I'm there. And if I start crying, I start crying, which I did not. And it moves into my trapezius muscles. And then it goes back to my chest there. And then suddenly there isn't any sensation. And within an hour, a couple of hours, all that just run down feeling that I had, and that like overall just body fatigue, like I just couldn't recover from the hardest workout of my life. Like that was gone, and it was completely away. And so that's my process. And it sounds very similar to yours, actually.
Yeah, what I do in like even in the coaching program is, so what I'm doing is helping the practitioners integrate in a way that they have the transformation so that they can help someone else. What's happening is a lot of the professionals, right, they have been through 6, 8, 10 years of college and they've white knuckled it. They've not felt their emotions. They couldn't. They needed to get through school. Like they've had to turn that off.
Right.
And I think that has happened with humanity in general is we were not taught how to cope and how to deal and what to do with this. It's basically shut up, go in your room, put it, you know, we don't want to hear that. That's not how you should feel. That's not how you should think. That's wrong. Don't think that way. And so we've never been taught like emotions are such an important process. They're such an important part of our life. They are the language of the body. Like those things are hugely important, you know? And so a big part of our communication with ourselves has been turned off by turning that. And, you know, that's something we're doing here. So Louisiana rated 50 out of 52 for health. And so we've started a health coalition, and that's the things that we're targeting is reconnecting the disconnected, coping skills, and emotional intelligence. Like, it's those things that we weren't taught, you know, and we can't keep trying to teach, you know, at the electric chair level. We have to go to the high chair level. We've got to go to the parents before they even have the kids, before they hypnotize them, right? Because that's basically what's happened is, you know, and this is Bruce Lipton's work with the biology belief, is we are born into believing, like, what we've been taught, what we've heard. You're 4 years old, strapped down in a car seat, hearing mom and dad talk about there's not enough money and things are not safe. And things who's recording that? The child's brain. Now what happens when the child's 8? Something happens and it reminds them of that. And then what happens whenever they're 12 or 15? Boof, it's locked in, it's sealed in. That's when I think hypnotherapy is really needed, because we go in unconsciously, get beyond the mind, and find out the story that's triggering these emotions. But what I help them do is stay with this process is, if someone is not familiar on how to do that, is I kind of hold that container in that space for them that's super safe, and that allows room for it to be heard, for it to be felt, for it to be safe, and let it process and pass through. Because what's happening when they're trying to do it themselves and they don't have the experience, or they don't have the support or the help, is the nervous system is actually locking them out. Because what our brain does is it creates a barrier, like a fence, that's actually there to protect us and to keep us safe. And it's like, no, it's not safe to come here. It's not safe to feel that. It's not, just like what it does with TMS, right? It goes and turns off, triggers certain incidences to make you go into pay attention to that. Why? So you don't feel the emotion.
What do you think is one thing I've been thinking about, just pondering lately, is the book Cures there, because there's hundreds of people on the healing back pain review section of Amazon that read the book and instantly got better. What do you think is happening in those cases? Is it just like people that just, it's hyper belief and it's so deeply ingrained because of the things in this book, and that's just the way that it was? What do you think is happening?
I think it's awareness. You can't turn it off once you know it. It's like we have two light switches, right? So we have a switch that comes on and you see all the dark, all the blah, 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 all the stories you've been told, all the scary things, and your brain has found so much proof that all of that is true. And so it keeps recollecting, recurring, redoing, and we keep bringing more of that into our life. If you turn that switch off and you turn on the switch that there's light, that there's like, it doesn't have to be that way, that and you create that space of awareness, of knowing, of understanding that things can be different, and that we actually create. We create our life. We create our results. Everything that we think creates how we feel. How we feel determines how we're going to act. How we act determines what our results are. 100% all the time, every day, all day long. So if your thought is, it has to be this way. I have to suffer through pain. We're always going to be poor. That's not available for us. This is not for me. Look at the group. There's so many who believe that healing is not available for them. It can't happen for them. It can't happen that way. Why did it happen to so-and-so? I have a friend who says that. She was like, why did Byron Katie get to be enlightened by the cockroach and exercise on a park bench? And it's been 20 years and I still can't figure it out, right? It's because she believes that she can't figure it out. It's because, you know, it's like because we want to hold on to that old we want to hold on to that personality so badly. We're so afraid to be out of the loop, out of the tribe, left out of, you know, people not accepting us or whatever, that we hold on to that persona of us so strongly that we can't walk into the healing. We can't walk into the abundance. Our body can't even contain it. Our nervous system goes on fire. It throws it out because who are you when you're not in pain? Who are you when you have money? Who are you when you're going to be limitless? Who are you when you're going to be free to be yourself? Not connected to that, right? And so we're so darn afraid of that. I know for me, when I paid the guy the money to do the Facebook ads, in an instant, I'm telling you, I must have brought in Joan of Arc energy. I just knew I was going to be hung. I was going to be burnt at the stake. I was going to be arrested. There was no way I can go out in the world and speak this stuff on a global platform. Who am I to talk about yoga and meditation and mindfulness and feelings and that medicine wasn't the answer and that it's all placebo? Who am I to say that? Like I told him, I was like, I realized it weeks later. I was like literally looking over my right shoulder out through the corporate waiting to be arrested. Like it was that real to me. Mm-hmm. That fear was so real. The fact that I'm speaking and saying it to you today is only through the transformation of experiencing sciatica and being down in that position one more time. The only reason that I've now have the courage and had to experience it myself on such a deep level one more time. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think when they read it, there's a part of them that knows it. And that part of them in that moment feels the vibration and the sensation of it. It creates an imprint. And then once you create that imprint, that belief, that feeling, that vibration, you keep tapping right back into that, keep breathing into that, keep breathing into that. It becomes the new light switch.
Yep.
And then what you used to think is no longer so. What you used to think 10 years ago, do you even recognize that person? When I go back and read my journals, I remember in 2011, I wrote, Lord, help me to hide it. All of a sudden, I had this huge shift. I had this huge awakening. I could look at people. I could see their physical pain. I could see the emotion behind it. I was like, God, don't give me this. If I can't do anything about it, don't. Like I remember exactly where I was sitting when I saw them limp, when I saw them sit, when I saw the pain in their face. And I was like, I don't want this gift if people won't receive it. Like I remember it so specifically, you know, it's that kind of thing. And it took all this time for me to actually end these experiences again and again. Like I'm saying, last year year before last, it was my left labrum. Like I have the MRIs. It's torn. It's pulled down. It's like the only way to repair it is to go in. I did this work. I did this work. I do not have any pain at all in my left shoulder. I did not have the surgery on the bulging disc, on the impingement, like any of that stuff. I'm fine. I'm 100%. I did not have either of those two surgeries.
What, I just saw, hopefully you didn't see this video in the last couple of days as it strewn around online, because I'm curious about what you think. What is happening with, there's the early 1990s study in the New England Journal of Medicine about 70% of people walking around right now asymptomatic have a herniated disc. And I think of, your example, people that lots of people in CrossFit and weightlifting, my sports have. I bet would have labral tears or have other sorts of issues that would show up on imaging. Half have pain, half don't. You know, it's probably something like that. What is going on? Just describe to me what is going on with the people that have the pain versus the people that don't, if their imaging was exactly the same.
We are highly suggestible. Look at my story. I was told that my body was not, I couldn't depend on it. There was probably something wrong with my brain. You know, look at the people who are removed, who have mastectomies because someone in their family had breast cancer. They have no sign of breast cancer, but they're suggestible and they believe it. And what does Bruce Lipton say about that? Like, he says our genes are only responsible for 1%. It's our environment. It's what we hear. It's what we believe. It's what we've been hypnotized. It's what we have been taught. We are suggestible. Our brains are like these amazing little sponges. And we look at what we do as parents. Baby, don't do that. You're going to get hurt. Oh, you shouldn't. They're not going to like you if you act that way. You really should do this. And then Susie comes home crying. Mom's like, what's the matter? And she's like, Sheila wouldn't play with me. And she's like, oh, and then mom comes up with something negative about her so that she can feel better, right? Like, this is what we've been taught.
Yeah.
Everything that we heard, we believed, we locked and sealed the deal. And the only way to undo that is to truly come to presence and awareness, or to have someone hold the space for us to become really, really safe. We're willing to go inside and look at this darkness. And I call it shadow dancing. It's like, or, you know, we're like playing the edge. And I do that. I do that as a coach. I mean, I can feel it. It's almost like a dance with the cranial system, that I can just feel where we can just like right there where they're about to, and I can pull it back in. And that's what it takes, right? Because I say we, and I'm talking about people who have experienced trauma. Listen, that pain comes up, their nervous system fires. Doubt comes up, their nervous system fires. Fear comes up, their nervous system fires. That is an instant way of, what do we go into? Mental paralysis. You can't make a decision. You're sitting there staring. You might see this in like little kids. And when I say trauma, I'm not talking about it had to be something major. Trauma could be your brother passing by kicking your ice cream that you waited 2 weeks for, right? It's like, oh, my dream is gone. You know, it could be the dollhouse that your dad threw away because he said you were punished. And that was like where you went and had your little daydreams at. Trauma is in the eye of the perceiver. Trauma is meant to the person.
I'm glad that you say that, because there's somebody that I'm going to have on in the next couple of weeks. And she is a TMS coach after herself having a life-changing experience. And recently I saw her write and do a video talking about how she's refusing to call it trauma anymore, because people interpret and think that trauma has to be a big type T, you know, you witnessed a killing, you know what I mean? Like the stuff that we think of is really, really bad.
Instances and experiences that we perceived as something painful and scary.
Right.
That's what trauma is. It's an experience. This is a samskara. So a samskara is a scar within the energetic body. This is like from the yoga world. You can scratch your arm, your skin on the outside, and you have a scar, but we have scars on the inside, on our cellular system. You know, this old stories, these emotions, you know, feelings buried alive never die. Your body keeps the score. What happens is the emotion gets pressed down and it goes into the organs. It goes into the fats, tissues. It goes into the muscles. It goes into our body. Our body is so smart and resilient. You know, it holds it there because we can't handle it. Imagine when you find out about this tragedy and someone is like instantly gone. And you're like 3 weeks later, like you've already done the funeral. You've already cleaned out the house. And you're like, you're still looking at your phone, right? Your brain can't comprehend. Our body like has a way of protecting us where you can't receive all that at one time. I think our brains would blow up. I think our hearts would explode. I think, you know, we would just like kill over because we can't handle it. We're not emotionally tolerable of some of this stuff. And so I see this all the time, and I bet you do too, especially in the fitness world. Like, you see all this reactive anger and rage and, you know, all of these things, then people getting pissed off in traffic and mad at the people at Walmart, and, you know, they didn't say what I wanted them to say. Matter of fact, try to put something out on Facebook that's an opinion. Holy smoke! Like, you get attacked because people are so reactive to and responses to their emotions, kind of like with the whole Trump thing, right? Just the mention of that word will throw some women like out in left field, because it brings up, they recognize him with sexual misconduct with someone else, you know, and it just like blows up. I think, you know, it's like all neutral. It's just an incident. It is a precedent that has brought in the ability, the placehold for people to actually, this stuff to come up for them to deal with it.
Yep.
We could look at that. We could choose to look at that instead of being shut down by it. It's an opportunity to experience these things that come up within us. They are already a part of us. He's not making it happen. It's already in us. No one can bring up, or nothing can bring up, something that doesn't already belong in us, that's already there in us.
I think, right? About the traffic thing is a really good example. There was a few months ago, I remember I was taking a... I was facing west. It was close to sunset, so, you know, incredibly bright. I had the window shade down. I had my sunglasses on. I went to go take a left, and there was somebody was walking in the crosswalk, and it startled me for a second. It was my fault. I wasn't paying attention. I didn't hit the person. I wasn't even really that close. But they were just, you know, they were screaming at me when I was 300 feet away, like meaning 300 feet, I had passed them. The situation was over. And I was just thinking, like, the continuous yelling and the anger and all that kind of stuff. And people in traffic that do like bang on the horns or lay on the horns and do all these kind of things, I just start thinking, like, the beaker is full. Like their beaker is full, and the slightest little thing can set them off. I mean, that's the, when Steve Ozanich has the equivalence of TMS or back pain or whatever in the back of his book, and it's like excessive anger. Like there's a lot of things that could be. And so some people will try and cope.
A great job with that, like articulating that. I love talking to him. He's like really fabulous with this, the awareness of this. I think of that with, that's what everything, right? Prejudice, the whole gay rights thing, the whole black and white thing, all of it. It is the fear that if that is allowed, something else will happen. That's what they're reacting to. That's what they're responding to. It's not to the person, to the lifestyle, to the thing that's happening. It is what will happen if this is allowed. Then they worry about their kids, their family, their people. Like, it makes them an unsafe world, right? That's where it's coming from. It's all fear-based. And so when I think about, we had this, Mickey Schunick was her name, and she was like hit on her bike. Someone ran into her bike, took her, killed her, and like, actually it's kind of weird, but it's like happened in a city near me, but the guy had to pass in front of my house to bury her. Like, he threw her in an old field, an old cemetery, behind an old cemetery, threw her body like a mile from my house. And I'm a bike rider, and so many people told me I shouldn't be riding my bike, it wasn't safe, and you know, because of all these reasons and stuff. And you know, I was like, hold on, this is not making sense. You're warning me so that you can hear yourself, so that you think if you never do that, you are safe. So the reasoning behind it was 1 o'clock in the morning and she was riding her bike. She shouldn't have been there at 1 o'clock in the morning. She shouldn't have been on her bike. She shouldn't have been young. She shouldn't have been whatever it was, right? That's their story. The reason they wanted to believe that is because they thought, well, I would never ride my bike at 1 o'clock in the morning there, right? So now I'm safe. Is that true? Because I was like, hold on. What about the kids who are at the bus stop at 7 o'clock in the morning who got picked up?
Right.
Tell me, and their jaws would just drop. And I was like, it's all perception, right? You say and think everything and protect yourself in order for you to feel safe, to believe that you're in a safe world, and you don't even listen to what you're saying when you say it. And it's the same thing with all of this prejudice and presidency and politics, like everything. At the end of the day, we want to be safe and connected. Period.
Right.
And our emotions and these repressed emotions, right, are there because we did not feel safe to feel them. Our body held them, put them down. Our brain is now the bodyguard, right? Your brain is now the bodyguard, like never coming out, never coming out. Yep. Oh no, can't feel that. And so we spend our whole entire life behind our own prison system. Never being able, like that trip I just went on, I could have believed that I was unsafe, that it was unsafe. I went by myself, right? I could have, lots of things. Did they cross my mind? Heck yeah, when I couldn't find a hotel in the middle of the night and I'm down something called extraterrestrial highway and there's alien signs and there's no, like 2.5 hours before a gas and a, any time, it says bed and gas 2.5 hours on a made up sign. I was like, oh my God, what's happening, right? You know, all kinds of things. And I could have chosen that, or I did what I do, which is I got present. I felt the emotion. I felt the fear. I was nervous about it. And then I asked myself the questions that I always ask. Is it true? Who would I be without that thought? Can I trust life?
It sounds similar to when I was in New Orleans last spring in April or late March. And it was the first time that I do a solo trip, usually once a year of some kind. I'm, you know, gone for 5 nights or something like that. And it was in New Orleans, and it was the first time I hadn't rented a car in the place that I had gone. And so I had to walk through the 8th Ward, the lower 9th Ward, some of the more dangerous parts of New Orleans. And I, you know, I felt these were the houses, you know, plenty of houses that were abandoned after Katrina, and the neighborhood still haven't been rebuilt 14 years later. And I know exactly what you're saying, feeling that kind of fear, what's going to happen. It's, you know, 1 in the morning or midnight or whatever. And I'm walking around, I'm by myself. I'm, you know, I'm dressed in black, like whatever it is that can happen. But when I would put myself, basically the anticipation of getting to those areas and having the fear be a part of it, I, you know, allowed myself to feel scared about it. But then once I got there and I was thinking like, okay, like if somebody comes up behind me and kills me, like it is what it is, what can I do about it? And that's just the way that it is. And almost just that acceptance of the fear was really all that I needed to get over it.
And you know what the interesting part is? Like what you just said, like, right? And kind of like what I said, like what we've been told, like dressed in black, walking in a certain area, certain time of night. Like, you see what I'm saying? That's what I mean by we've been hypnotized to like scan the fears.
Yep.
we've been warned to the point that, like, and so all of this stuff is like buried, and we got all these stories, and we've got like social conditioning, and we've got generational patterns, and we've got habits and behaviors, and oh my God, we get it from, it starts with our parents, then our babysitters, and then our bus driver, and our PE teacher, and our principals, and our catechism teachers, and the priest, and it just goes on, and it's endless how many stories we have heard from people who truly just repeating a story they heard.
And how exhausting to constantly just be scanning there's the scene in the original Jurassic Park where the kids are locked in the kitchen and the velociraptor comes in there. He's looking for him, and you just see him scanning for any little sense of noise or movement or anything like that, this heightened sense. And it's very much like that, the reptilian part of the brain, the amygdala, which is obviously, I mean, it's always scanning for some kind of a problem, but that's the fight or flight mechanism. And that's always what I think about with people that are constantly scanning for danger or always afraid of this or always seeing the worst in situations. And it can also, by the way, work the other way. Caitlin Michaels, I thought, did an amazing job recently on a podcast of hers where she had said there's a lot of focus on, you know, people that only think negative and they need to start thinking positive. But she had also pointed out that basically, and Steve Ozanich, I feel like, has said something like this, like chronic illness and issues like this really come out of gray, basically, like a conflict of some kind. So if you view something as all bad, there's probably some good in some way that's in it. On the flip side of that, if you view something as only good and that's the only way it is, there may be something that's a little bad in it, right? So being able to think in the gray as opposed to the black and the white, having it be a true yin and yang could be very beneficial to people. And I think about that too. Like, as somebody who thinks black and white all the time, that can be problematic because it...
But they'll keep creating it because it's all they see. And so our mind is so highly suggestible that it takes that thought from our grandfather, passed down to our dad, passed down to us, you know, show me la vie, Kim, how far you got to go? You know, money don't grow in trees, yep, or, you know, whatever it is. And then we keep writing into it. And then all of a sudden we come across this abundance and we come across money. And then here comes dad's voice, right? And here comes the... And it kind of goes back and forth. I think the contrasts are super important. You know, we need to feel we need to feel like I felt so much, you know, pain and so much distress with my body and so much, like all of that stuff, that right now you cannot slap the gratitude from me. Like, you could not beat it out of me. I am so grateful for the body and for what it does and for how it works. And, you know, I was talking to someone about this today about what she loved about her body, or, you know, she was having this body image thing. And I was like, let's start with your eyes, you know, and like all of the things that you're allowed to see. It's not even about the look of your eyes. It's about what your eyes do, you know, right. And it's like, we can just scan that with the whole entire body. And gratitude is a choice. We can choose to look at what we want to bring more of into our life, you know, and will we still experience contrast? Heck yeah. Thank God. It's kind of boring. Like, I went through a phase where everything was so great and good, you know, after all of this, and I'm like, oh man, okay. I know right now we have to be humans. You know what I'm saying? Like, I stayed in the valley for so long, thought there was no way out. Like, I really thought that, like, I was just going to end my life. Like, I just could not tolerate another mom. I just couldn't get the out, you know, and I didn't have the support and I didn't have the upbringing. I didn't have the tools that I'm talking about, the coping tools. And, you know, yet that cave, that darkness, the dark night, they say the dark night of the soul. I think our soul is all light. I think it's the dark night of the mind. You know, it's getting through all of these limiting beliefs, all of the stories that we've been told, the conditioning, the patterning, all that stuff. That's the dark night, is we have to go through and process. It almost feels like a life review, like a past life review, you know, or like, you know how they talk about the near-death experience and then they see their life pass through them. I've seen that, you know, happen. And like, and I take clients there and I'll ask them, and I was like, what was that? And you were like, it was like I was watching all of that stuff. And I was like, I know, right? It's like that in-life review thing. And we get to process the emotions as it processes through, and then still have a life. Like, how fabulous is that?
Yep.
A life of abundance, a life without pain, a life of health, a life of like joy and ease and flow. And, you know, this process came through me as a download. I was I was invited into a platform. We filmed a documentary on transformation in Switzerland, and as part of the group, you had to write a book and you had to have an online program. And so I was like, I don't know what to write about. I don't want to write about like people, right? By the things that have happened and the things I've endured in order to get here, that didn't feel right. And I was like, what can I write about? And all I could think of is like, how did I get here? How did I actually survive after a suicide attempt? How did I actually survive after this, after rape, after house fires, after abandonment, after rejection, you know, how did, And so I was like, I went to start writing. I'm typing on my computer and I just go blank. Like, I have no idea where to start. So, of course, where do I go? To Facebook, because that's what we do when we don't know what else to do.
Yep.
And so I open up Facebook and the post is just sitting right there. Louise Hay died. And I was like, no, like instantly went into this, like, I was so sad. Like, she was such my mentor and teacher. And I just knew I was going to see her live. And I passed up an event where I didn't go. And so I just locked the little thought in my mind, like, I will never miss anything I ever want to do again. Like, boof, mark, done, move on. And so I kind of did this, like, just kind of channeling thing. Like, what, I don't know. Like, it's suddenly everything just started coming through, opened up. You know, I put a little prayer, wrote the book out. And this exact process that I shared with you is what came through me. And so it's the technique that I use. And I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. So many people were having breakthroughs. There were clients were coming in faster than I can serve them. I stopped everything. I started doing the coach training and putting out more mentors and teachers and leaders. I started helping the medical profession, health, wellness, medical health coaches, life coaches, all of that stuff who were dealing with trauma recovery. It's like, listen, this is what's missing. I can help you, you know, teach them how to process it. And we see this in the TMS group. This is the missing link. It's the processing. It's the integration and embodiment of taking the information that we know. It's like, it's great to know that it's just your emotions. Now what? Right. And so it's like the process is coming into presence. Unveiling the story, testing it, questioning it, is it true? And then navigating around it, like telling yourself, that's not me, I'm not five, I'm not in danger, I'm not unsafe, I'm not poor, that's not true. Once you do those three steps over and over and over and you clean out the space, then you create the future version, you create what you want to bring more of into your life. And then once you create it, you do the how-to steps, that's the P-U-N-C-H, it's how to take massive action. Choose what you want, commit to it on all levels. Commit to it as if it were your kid, like commit to yourself, to your vision, and then cultivate it as if it already serves you, already become that person. And every decision you make is in that moment is from that point of view, from who you are becoming. And then you continue doing that every day. And the result of doing those five steps is living your life's legacy. What are you here for? As an integrated being on all levels, mental, how you think, emotional, how you feel and process, spiritual, who you are as a soul, occupational, what's your service you offer the world, financial, are you able to financially support yourself? Do you have your needs met? Intellectually, do you continue to learn? Environmentally, how is your relationships, your environment? What do you give back to your social community? Right? All of those layers as your natural essence, who you are as a soul being in ease and flow. Yeah. That to me is... If I were to ask at the end of the day, what do I want to experience more than anything else? It's like, I truly want to experience all of my soul's essence, the whole entire experience, the contrast, the ups and downs, the feelings, the ins and outs, and that not wanting to be afraid. I don't want to be afraid anymore. I was so afraid as a kid, abandoned as a kid by myself. Like, I was so afraid of everything and it was so limiting and it caused so much conflict in my body and my organs, you know, and I like not having, I just wanted to feel safe and I wanted to feel connected and I wanted to feel whole. And this process is what got me there. And so that's what came through and downloaded. And it's really, As a human experience, is that not what we're trying to do, is bridge the gap between soul essence and humanity?
Certainly. Well, we're going to we're wrapping up, but I want people to be able to find you online in case they want to learn more. Plug your stuff. Let's get into that. How do people find you?
Okay, I have a podcast. It's called Integrative Life. I'm trying to think of the name. I don't even know the name, but it's Integrative Life with Kim Gilry. It's for health and wellness leaders. And we have a membership site and to have an online Facebook group that's called the Integrative Life, where we do these little group challenges. What my mission is truly to create a community where people can have this. It's kind of like transformation doesn't have to happen alone, like what you and I had to experience, right? We figured it out. And then you kind of turn around and your neighbors and your family and your everyone else is like, I was like, listen, you feel like an alien, I am your planet.
Yep.
Come on over.
Yep.
Like, I want to create what I didn't have and what I was seeking that whole entire 20, 30 year process, you know, of trying to figure it out. And that is, so in that particular group are these coaches that I've trained. So there's plenty of leaders and health practitioners, and we have psychotherapists and we have pharmacists and physical therapists and yoga teachers, life coach, energy workers, you know, all of that stuff as part of the group that actually helps to support, and that's that's pretty much it. I have a local business, you know, here in Louisiana, and we're kind of turning this more into a holistic wellness. We have massage therapy and fitness training and personal trainers, and it's just anything that can help us to connect, you know, mind, body, integration, processing, embodiment, that support. Yep. You know, that woohoo world that's, I think our medical world is going to eventually have enough of their patients speak about it. It's kind of like with essential oils, right? There was like, that was the scariest thing. I did essential oils 20 years ago, and it was kind of like, I've been called like a witch and like having a cult and, you know, like all this stuff for so long that I've kind of just like, now it's just kind of funny. In the past, it felt very isolating and scary. And I know this is what a lot of people are experiencing because they're trying to find the answers and they're having to seek alternative and holistic, and they find some answers, they share it with a neighbor or a friend, they say, you know, kind of turn it down, then they suddenly feel like they don't belong. Then, you know, it's, that's, to me, is a big part of the process, is really coming to believe that that information is coming through to you.
Yep.
Because it is truth. You're just open and available to listen and hear because you've been in a position, what I'll call rock bottom, where you've tried everything else. I did it. I have a particular podcast where I'm like, I did everything. I cut my hair. I sent it off. I spit in a cup. I shit on a stick. I did like you. I did it all. I took the supplements. I listened. I did the scans. I did it all. Thousands of dollars in years. Like, insane how much. And so I know there are other people out there doing that, you know, and I would like to get to them before they actually remove the organs and maybe catch it before they pass it on to the next generation. You know, if we can like seriously catch it from the high chair, you know, and rather than trying to fix it from the electric chair, you know, catch it at the beginning. And these young adults, they already know, Eddie, they know so much more than us. Look at your kids, you know, like they're open to this stuff. And what happens is we close them off when we hypnotize them to scarcity and to fear and to doubt and to worry and that stuff. We yep. close off. You take a kid that's not like patterned and conditioned like that, they don't feel that way.
Yep. Yeah, I'm totally with you. Well, Kim, thank you so much for the interview. This is going to launch here very, very soon. It's actually, as we record this, it's going to air next week. So people are going to be hearing it really, really soon. Thank you so much again. And I will, I'll include links to everything that we had talked about at the bottom of the show description. Basically, people can find it there.
Yeah, that's fine. The Integrative Life is probably the best place just to kind of hang out, like with the TMS group. And that, you know, it's just that place to commune and to have this conversation. And I'm so glad to have, well, we've kind of passed messages and stuff, but we've never really had the whole full conversation, you know, aside from reading each other's stories. But I think there's a lots of people out there who are looking for the answers.
I agree. Cool. Thanks, Kim. Appreciate it.